Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood.
Hello, everyone. Happy Monday.
Well, happy Monday. All right.
So, got a hot to trot Monday after a nice Cowboys win yesterday. Gotta like that.
Everybody is super excited here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, particularly after spending $90 million on Mr. Elliott. And, you know how the Dallas people are. They get an early win and they go bananas with it. So
yeah, they're like, oh, it's our year this
that's
year.
That's it. Super Bowl bound, man. You know, this is it. And now, you know, once we get deeper in the schedule, after about 2 or 3 weeks, then we'll kind of see more what the team is made of, what the offense coordinator is made of, the play calling and such. But you know, it is fun to get that win. It's fun to see everybody super happy and everything. So did you see the whole game, or you just were,
I caught parts of it. Cause actually the programming out here, I caught part of it on my iPad. We got the San Francisco game. Unfortunately, I don't know what the fuck is up with Fox, but they better get that straightened out here quickly.
Yeah. Right. Ouch. Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely America's team, man. Gotta check them out on some sort of an affiliate somewhere. But yeah. That was a good game. And then your Horns, Matthew McConaughey almost dropping F-bombs. Yeah, man. Yeah. Tigers. Yeah, did you happen to see?
I saw that one most of, actually.
I saw the second half of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good one though. I mean, I think they, well, and how about Kyler Murray yesterday, bringing his team back. That was another interesting. Been some interesting themes this weekend in football, so.
Yep, and my Aggies didn't do so well. They didn't do as good as they did last year when they lost Clemson in the last second. They had a healthy loss, sadly, this time. So, not good for the Aggs. So, let's see if they can put it together here.
It's tough to continue recruiting year in and year out at a high level, especially in the SEC, where there's so much competition, such a tough division there. So, we'll see, but that's why I think ultimately the best coaches, cream rises to the top. So the best coaches in football, just like, in the world that we live in as concierge coaches, do rise to the top.
That's right, baby.
You like that segue?
There you go. Nice, man. That was nice. Very nice. So true. So true.
And, it's been, I don't know, I'd love to hear about your week last week too, but my week was interesting, a lot of impromptu coaching last week, right? So it's one of those things where, as a coach, when you get called, the 911, well, maybe it doesn't come across as a 911, but hey, need to have a quick call, I need to sort through this or that, and you just realize, not too bad at this, being able to walk people through this. So I think for the listeners out there, it's really important to be mindful, of blind spots, right? Johari's window.
Oh, love it.
And that's why we have coaches in the first place, right? Even coaches have coaches.
Which part of that blind spot, what I don't see about myself that others see about me, type quadrant?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's the bottom right.
There you go.
Depending on which model you're looking at, but
there you go.
So there's that which we see and identify in, and that which others see and we see, and then there's that which others see that we don't. That's the blind spot, and that which we don't see and others don't see, which is like what I call a dead spot, you know. So you look to, you know, hold yourself accountable, or if you're a coach, you know, you're part of your role is holding others accountable for those blind spots, right? So
exactly.
I found it interesting, though, you know, and I love the sports talk, right? Because coaches in sports are, I mean, really our role is very similar, right? Yeah, they might be calling plays and substituting players in and out. But as a coach, you're essentially doing a, you know, similar function. Maybe it's from a business perspective. I know you work with a lot, you know, different sectors, you know, airlines, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have their own set of needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really our role to just kind of, okay, we know our players, we know their behaviors. So what's next, right? All right. So you just kind of try to nudge them and guide them along the way, right? Or at least call the right play that, you know, if they're a Dak Prescott, you know, who isn't an accurate passer, you try to call plays that, you know, even an inaccurate passer can hit the mark on.
Exactly. Exactly. So, well, yeah, I mean, a lot of similarities there, and had the opportunity one of my clients is a horse hunter jumper person, horse rider,
horse jumper, or professional horse rider.
Yep. And so I got to, it's the second competition, and man, these folks riding these horses, for instance, a horse barn will have anywhere from 5 to 20 horse riders show up to a meet. Okay. And there's different classes of, you know, of events, right? Of jumping events, mm-hmm. hunter events, displays, and those things. So one of the things, Justin, that was amazing. So we're watching, there was this event, and our rider was going to be number 3. Rider number 1 goes out into the ring, doing pretty good. And man, the horse just threw this rider off. I mean, threw her off, and it broke, the lady broke her collarbone. Okay. And
sure, extremely painful. I've heard that's one of the most painful injuries you can endure.
Yeah. So EMS is out there, you know, finally get the lady up, secure her, you know, isolate her shoulder, get her on a golf cart, get her out. Actually, the horse jumped the fence, man, and other people had to get to. Anyway, and this isn't, you know, Justin, these people that own these horses, right? These are like $1 million horses, right? And so this is not, you know, this is pretty Grand Prix level stuff. So this is just not a bunch of yahoos, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so they have, you know, groomers and golf carts and motorcycles. I mean, this is quite an operation. Anyhow, I got to be there with the other competitors. And, man, that shook a lot of people in that heat. Now, you know, our people, you know, made it through the heat without any incident, right? But you know, you could just hear the horse people talking, man, I hate what that happens. Now I got to clear my head with this thing. You know what I mean? And a lot of the people made mistakes, you know, going through there because of that person, you know, cracking their you know, having the unfortunate accident. So it's really interesting where, you know, it's interesting, Justin, because you cannot have self-limiting beliefs when you're on a horse.
No,
you can't, because you know why? Because the horse is gonna know, right?
Mm-hmm.
That the horse is can read your mind, man. It just can. You know what I mean? With certain things, I know it sounds creepy and weird, but
well, they feel energy.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It just yeah. They feel it. They feel it. And so you, I mean, for the love of God, you know, if you you know if you're going to ride in these events, your mind has to be strong. So it, and it's really interesting. These mistakes come in two flavors, right? It either comes in some sort of unknown fear, and then the other flavor is actually arrogance.
Ooh.
and the arrogance rider will, it's, it shouldn't be arrogance, but it's overconfidence in what's going to happen. You know what I mean? And not actually micromanaging the jump on the horse. You know what I mean? It's yep. just a real subtle thing. You don't want to come on too hard. You don't want to be too soft. You don't want, you know, it's that real interesting relationship between rider and horse, but just thinking, nah, you know, I'll, you know, we were going so good. I'll let the horse do what it wants to do. And because I thought it kind of knew, and then just one, you know, and these jumps that are so high, you know, there is absolutely no room for error. You know what I mean? Like their hooves just barely, you know, the front hooves barely clear on the way up, the rear hooves barely clear on the way down, on the arc of that kind of story arc of the jump, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just not all this margin for error in the big leagues. So anyway, but so it's just amazing, you know, to see how that would happen. And the last jump cling, you know, the bar goes down like, oh my gosh, you know. So
and I think they get like a 10-second penalty or something.
There's a penalty, and man, and in these classes, that's money. You just left. You just got hundreds of dollars of bills, cut the band off it and let the wind blow, you know, for that mistake, you know. And you just watch the money just blow away and not into your hands. So anyway,
That's fascinating, though, you think about it, right? So the two paradigms were overconfidence and self-limiting beliefs.
And or fear. Okay, so fear of the horse. Sometimes it's fear of the horse. Some of the mid to veteran riders have had spinal fusions and whatnot, and so they'll really over-identify with somebody who's been hurt because they've been hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But NASCAR drivers don't usually feel that way. Like the ones that have rolled over and been smashed, like, oh, well, I was smashed in Talladega. Like they get in the damn car. You know what I mean? It busts out in flames. Like, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? That's part of the deal. You know, so it really is interesting how people perceive their injuries in the sport. And I just thought it was pretty interesting. Off the beaten path type of stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you don't really think about that, and it's probably not the first sport that comes to mind, but yeah, I mean, it's another one. And you think about the relationship with the horse, and, you know, I know when we first moved to Texas, back in the day, I was wee young. One of the first things I did was get into horse class or whatever it's called. Okay. Yeah. Learn how to care for the horse, learn how to, you know, groom the horse, clean its hooves, right? But you learn that it's all about the relationship with the horse.
Right.
And since then, and you know, so like even last year when Naomi and I went to the Dominican Republic, we went on this tour, and part of the tour was, you know, we rode horses up the mountain and down the mountain. And she's all freaked out. And I'm like, you know, just got to look the horse in the eye, you know, just got to calm it down, pet it a little bit, you know, let it know it's going to be all right. You're not going to, you know, kick it or, you know, hurt it or whatever, because that's what they're afraid of.
Yep. That you're going to put it in a bad spot. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's another good point. So, it's just an interesting, it's just an interesting area, you know, another area where on the horse thing is where you, if you're a confident rider, you know, and you can get on a you know, $40,000 horse, win some good contests with it, and then sell the horse for $100,000, right? And say, oh man, this is a, you know, you want this horse because it's won all these competitions, you know, and there's actually a market for that, right? You know, or some of these, you know, super well-to-do people that have a adolescent child that's, you know, coming out of the pony class and needs a, you know, now the young lady's 5'9" and, you know, whatever, and just has to get on, you know, has to learn on a larger animal and build some efficacy and then go up in their divisions, you know? So anyway, if they're going to stay relevant. So
horse training and its relationship with coaching.
Yeah, man.
But it is, right? And so you think about people we work with, and so think about, you know, the horse might be a client. You know, I'm sure you probably can relate to this metaphor, right? You know, your horse is your client, and, you know, they just want to know that, you know, hey, you know, I'm heard, I'm valued, this person can relate to me. And then, yeah, you know, and then you're like, okay, and now, you know, we're going to show you how to, you know, ride up the mountain, right?
Right. And interestingly, what's made different, because this is my second one. I was one in, you know, I was there for one in Houston. I was here for a few days on this one here in Tyler. And so I was there with the rider and the horse. I swear it made a difference that I was there with the horse as well. Mm. I know it's kind of weird. I'm not, I'll just stop the conversation there. But I mean, you know what I mean? Like in the horse, you know, I'm sitting there talking, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Okay. How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? The horse is there. Horse is listening, right? I mean, horse is, you know, so anyway, God, it was so hot too, man. It was like 100 degrees and
I bring up Texas weather, man.
Yeah, man. So, anyhow, so that was another interesting field that, you know, coaching applies that mindset. I think some of the coaching we've seen, you know, mindset coaches and just really having that mindset, particularly, you know, going into the ring, you know, particularly going into the ring and that relationship and mindset thing. Good stuff. You know, it's applicable in that arena as it is in personal coaching and business coaching. So did want to share that allied.
Yeah, I see that a lot too. I mean, last week had several conversations with colleagues and partners and clients and whatnot where, you know, it's having posture as a coach is important too, right? So, you know, where your clients, for example, know they need to sort of listen to you, right? I know this goes unsaid a lot too, but it's like, hey, if you hired me as your expert authority, then when I ask you to do this, I need you to do it, right? Like that's part of your homework assignment.
Right. And then if that continues, you say, hey, wait a minute, let's talk about something. I noticed that you had set a goal of XYZ, but yet you're not working toward goal XYZ. And are we going to have to reevaluate our goals here? Yeah. Or is there a block somewhere else?
And then that gets into, you know, some of the stuff that you work with your clients on a lot of releasing of emotional blocks and, you know, MER techniques and, you know, whatnot to, hey, let's rid ourselves of the personal blocks so we can get, you know, open yourself up, you know, from a business perspective. Because that happens a lot too, right? I mean, clients, that's why as coaches, we have to be nimble. Sometimes we need to talk about business, you know, for an hour. Sometimes we need to talk about, you know, well, hopefully not for the full hour, but, you know, they need to vent or.
Yeah, right. You know. Vent some of the personal stuff or whatever and clear the pipes a bit. right? Clean out a little bit so the work can begin. So absolutely that happens. That happens a lot. That happens a lot. So
yeah, what have you noticed is probably like the most common block you see with your clients as you work with them?
One would be, I think, fear and anxiety about the future. Fear and anxiety about the future. So they have anxiety about whatever it is that's ahead of them that they really can't control. You know, you really can't control. You can control what you do in the moment. You can, you know, certainly have some goals. You can have some good structures and paradigms that you're working, but you're right. But you really cannot control the future per se. And so that's why I kind of borrow from the recovery literature about making the next right decision.
Yeah.
And then just go from that, you know, and then see where that leads.
Yeah. That's why they suggest, like, you know, in the olden days, but you know, okay. For sure centuries ago, let's call it centuries ago, you know, when the, let's say multitasking was less of a thing, right? People were probably specialists in one area. So you're a blacksmith or you're a carpenter or whatever it was, right? You just focus on that all day long. And that is what you do. And so the stressors, I guess, less. I guess studies have shown that. I don't know if it's true or not. But I can see how it could be true, right? And then you look at today's society, that's why I feel like as coaches, a lot of what we do is trying to get down to those main stressors, release that at least temporarily, and then teach the techniques and the, you know, give them the toolkit to continue on that journey, you know, after working with us, however long that is, right? That's the key. Creating self-sufficient, clients ultimately, but I mean at that point they're not clients anymore, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah they're on their own, which I'll bring it up here if there's something else that you want to kick around. But yeah. one things I wanted to kick around with you today is kind of a next level type of thing. It seems like there's a lot of, and I'm going to use the vocabulary that I've heard is e-courses, or little, I guess e-courses is the best way, that a lot of people now are taking their material, let's say coaches, okay, or business coaching, and this may be more, and so somebody like yourself, Justin, would have an e-course on, I don't know, channel partner this, or sales techniques that, or you know, whatever coaching modules that you identify, and then have this very proprietary e-course, right? That's on a platform and people pay to take your class, and you know, it's just not bootlegged out there on YouTube. I mean, it's a full on revenue stream, you know, deal. So, I'm actually going to shoot a 2-segment e-course on sex offender treatment on a paradigm called change maintenance. So, I know. And it's only going to be for sex offender therapists, probation officers, and the like. I'm not here to hawk that by any means. But I had talked to some LA people and New York people that work with other, I want to say people like yourself, you know, the Justin Emery is, the good guys of coaching. Anyway, you know, I thought, man, I got to talk to my, you know, I got to talk to my friend Justin about this e-course thing. Cause I could see you, brother, doing some, you know, 3 or 4 week segment on X, another 3 or 4 week segment on Y. You know what I mean?
Kind of like, and just rolling with it. Yeah.
Just the best of Justin Nimmergood, man. Just boom, and just have yourself in these content spheres and
talk about delivery mechanism. That's the key to that whole program.
Yeah. And right? So So interestingly, Justin, this company is sending down the film equipment to me. I'm flying to St. Louis to my co-presenter, and we're actually going to jerry-rig the shoot.
Okay. All right.
Bro, man. So you're going to I'm just telling you what's happening. Yeah, I'm just telling you what's happening, man. I know our listeners are going, man, it's so savage. I'm just saying that that's how that works. Now, on this Savage group, again, some of the other PR and publicist people I was talking to, several of these publicists now will have studios in their building or studios in their office or whatever. They can green screen it, and they'll have their, you know, let's say, I'm your agent. So I'm Bruce Cameron. I'm Justin Emmergood's agent or publicist. Okay, so we're going to do a contract, Justin, and I have this platform, and I'm going to bring you into the Bruce Cameron Studios, and we're going to shoot your, you know, channel partner series, mm-hmm. you know, and then we market it. There's a contract in place. Your attorney looks at it. My attorney looks, whatever, you know, we're going to get paid X, and here's the royalty, or, you know what I mean, whatever the, but then you would kind of go on deck shooting, not with a production crew or not kind of homebrew stuff, but kind of in this kind of paraprofessional studio that's already in place at your agent, publicist, or representative's under their space. Domain. Yeah.
Huh. That's a good idea.
And it keeps their costs low because they can do all the production in-house, be right there as the content is shot, be right there to edit the content-ish, be involved in that process, and that way they have a footprint in the content and the process and the work and whatever. Of course, there's a freaking proprietary element, right? You know, splitting that up. Yeah, that's why they're doing it, right? I mean, you know, they're not doing this for free or for the betterment of mankind per se. There's an interest. So that way you come in as the talent, do your thing, and then, you know, make this thing work. So tell me your initial thoughts on e-courses.
Yeah, I mean, well, they've been around for a while, right? So I love them. I love them if that you carve out the right niche with them and you deliver them in the right way. And then, you know, you've talked a lot about production costs and, you know, how to do it in an effective manner. That's really the key. It's like, okay, what's the first topic, right? All right, first topic is X. How do we produce this? All right, we're going to produce it in a studio or, as you said, a makeshift studio. Okay, great. Now, how are we going to deliver that into what audience? So now we're talking about target audience. You know, the total addressable market is X. Okay, great. So we need to reach, you know, X amount of people in order to make this an effective net return business proposition.
Right.
So, yeah, I love it. And I think a lot of people, you know, and like, as I've evaluated that market, so the whole podcast thing, as you brought it to me, that was already on my radar. E-courses, it's interesting. Last week, you know, I had some conversations with a HR company that does mostly sex, not a sex offender, but
sex abuse awareness or sex conduct.
Yeah, like in the workplace.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so they've only been doing that training in person really to date. And they're finally evaluating alternative options to deliver it to more people, hit a different niche at a lower price point. And so it's like, all right, well, how are you going to do that, right? Talk me through, you know, your logic. And, you know, net, we're talking about various platforms, but one of those, you know, would be Valid in this case, integrated into their ecosystem to help deliver this content. And it's like, okay, that's kind of interesting. So it's funny, actually, after our podcast here today, I'm going to be chatting with, you know, one of the leaders over there about next steps with that project, if you will. And that's a big trend right now. A lot of companies and, you know, different segments, you could apply that to snow and ice removal. You could apply that to car wash, you know, business, right? Like what's a way that you can reach more people in a more effective manner at a lower cost of entry? You know, technology, right?
Right.
Technology, technology, right? That's why, you know, we're able to do so and do this across states. You know, I know a lot of other people are going into a studio every day, but we've kind of makeshift our own versions of this. Wrong or indifferent, but across states and, you know, visiting clients' offices or, you know, having them come to other neutral locations and kind of making do with what we have across what, Texas, California, right? Across state boundaries here.
Right. Right.
So my general, you know, thought and reaction is I like it. I think it's something that if you're a coach, you'd be dumb not to evaluate. But I say that, you know, evaluate carefully because it's something that you could end up, you know, being in over your head with a lot of, you know, high operational expenses if you don't have the programmatic sales strategy, you know, built out. And right. That's kind of how I look at things when I look at, you know, opening new markets or opening new revenue streams. That's what I generally do is go through that process.
Right. Yeah, it would be, you know, getting, because you could, I mean, again, thinking about your situation, of course, we both know people, but you, I mean, you could actually just get studio time or, you know, because what they're doing with this, with my thing, obviously, you know, we're going to be, I'll do a segment, Mark Karich does a segment, I'll do a segment, you know, or, and then they'll edit it. So we're just going to shoot a bunch of stuff, basically send the raw data back, mm-hmm. and then they'll edit it and produce it and make it happen. You know what I mean? We're just going to shoot enough material for them to string together the program. And then they're charging the people money because it'll be a continuing education credit for psychologists and others that are in the field. See? And so it'll be an online platform. Yeah.
That's kind of, you brought up a good point. That's the kicker there, right? So are you, you know, delivering value added content? Everyone's doing it. That's why everyone's doing it basically for free out on the internet right now. How can you tie it into another ecosystem where it's basically a mandated requirement?
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's why I'm doing it. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, and these, oh no, I need 3 hours of CEU on programming credit. Well, here we are to the rescue. And this change maintenance program is based on positive psychology. It should have legs for 10 years. You know what I mean? It's not going to be stale on the shelf or some fad thing, you know? And it has good, solid core principles. It's almost like talking about, you know, cognitive behavior therapy. You know what I mean? Like, okay, is that out of style now? Are there different subsets of it now that have more popular names? Yeah, but CBT still in the game. Kind of came out swinging, you know, even, you know, early mid-90s, you know, and it's still rolling today in that space. So I was thinking, like, let's look at your book, Entrepreneurship. Like, you know, or there are certainly things in that book that are still relevant today, you know?
And there's certainly more things, you know, for another book or, you know, right, to add to that, right? So, yeah, I've already thought about next book or next
for sure.
Whatever. Yeah. It's,
I was going to ask you about that. Like that, yeah, your next book with your insights and experiences that you've amassed since the publishing of Entrepreneurship, which a lot's gone on in your life since Entrepreneurship. You know, so I'm not laughing. Why am I laughing? It's not funny.
I'm laughing.
It's awesome. Okay. Thanks. I'm thinking of other things anyway. Growth points in your life is what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Anyway, so lots happened, right? And man, and you've certainly, you know, embraced the wave of things that are, you know, going on. you know, with business and sales and business and startups and those things. And
appreciate you saying that. Yeah, it's been an interesting time period, and you know, I think we all go through our ebbs and flows, and it's kind of how we respond, not react to it.
Yeah, and and you know, my issue, I'm actually, somebody made fun of me this week, like, oh, well, you just see too many clients and you live under a rock and you don't know what's going on. I was like, about ready to start another fight like I did on the phone with you a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, excuse me, I'm working too much. Isn't that the goal? But I had to really kind of, once again, kind of sit back and evaluate what that person was saying. And to some extent, right, if I am working direct line 30 plus hours a week, then I'm not thinking about, you know, what's going on around me in terms of mechanisms, delivery mechanisms.
Yeah.
Like e-course thing. Wow, what's that? E-course? What's that? That sounds pretty futuristic. No, I mean, I kind of knew, but I hadn't sat and thought about it. You know what I mean? Just because I'm just going from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. So anyway.
Well, and you have to be like, so, you know, you have to sometimes get off the treadmill or get off the hamster wheel in order to.
Sure.
And that goes for anything, whether it's a corporate job or you're a coach or, you know, whatever, consultant. I mean, any profession you're in, you have to take a, you know, time out. All right, let me evaluate the market right now. What's going on, right? Because that myopic view happens. I mean, it happens to everyone.
And I think I need to do that almost forcibly every 3 weeks, is take a time out for a quarter of a day. And you know what I mean? Kind of take a look around, see what's going on around me, right? And then kind of like the current events.
Yeah.
Current events class.
That's good.
Woo! Am I a boomer or what, folks? Anyway, but then take a look around, see what's going on. Like I said, to stay, I don't want to say stay relevant, you know, but I guess stay relevant in what's going on around me. So,
market awareness, adaptability.
Yeah. Because I really just, you know, I've kind of put all my eggs in the human behavior basket, you know, which is it's okay, right? Because human behavior is like a Snickers bar. You can only cut it up so many ways. There's different labels for it. But, you know, it's pretty timeless, I think, you know, some of the mistakes that people make and self-limiting beliefs and hang-ups and addictions and compulsions and fear. So all that's just kind of, you know, same stuff, different day, different label, which is good, but you know, I do have to get more in tune with the processes and, you know, social constructs and those things. Like, somebody's like, oh man, you got to get on Instagram, IGTV, man. IGTV is just going to take over YouTube, which I doubt, but, oh yeah. And this and that and the other, and that's going to be the new thing. And you got to get on that. And I've been, I might have said that, I don't know. Have you heard that, or what's your into that more? Have you yet? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I've been fiddling with it, but so I approach everything you're talking about a little maybe differently than many people. So some people, and for some stuff, I do this right. You jump in 2 feet first, and you're like, all right, great, right? For other stuff, I'm very methodical about my approach. Because it's like, okay, it's not just this. What's the trickle down or the domino effect of if you open up this channel, let's call it this IGTV channel, literally. What's the effect of that? Okay, well, we're opening to a new market. Is that part of the brand? Is that part of the, all right, so who are you serving in that channel, right? So I think IGTV serves a, very important channel right now. And actually, I do think, you know, YouTube is becoming commoditized a little bit, candidly, right? I mean, from the get-go, it was a free platform. And yeah, IGTV is free too, but I just see more, like, I don't see YouTube doing the geo-tracking, like the market awareness. So I, like Instagram, right? On your business page, you can get all the, you know, analytics from Instagram, for example, right? Other than, you know, views, like view count on your YouTube channel, it's pretty limited beyond that, unless you tie in some additional third-party software and stuff like that. So out of the box, already you get more analytics with IGTV. So therefore, I think it makes it a more, you know, interesting, perhaps value-additive platform.
Okay. So it has the analytics, and it also has what? The kind of close-knit, homebrew, intimate feel?
Yeah. It's like it could have been on a raw video or a non-raw video, whereas YouTube sometimes can come off as, you know, scripted and mass produced or whatever, right? So I think IGTV is still trying to go for that, hey, you know, we're going to be raw with this, but they back it up, you know, with the appropriate analytics. So I dig it. I think that's going to be kind of the next wave of monetization is through platforms like IGTV. You know, people have been monetizing YouTube for years. And I think from an advertiser perspective, it's kind of, like I said, it's pretty commoditized now. And to tap into that space now, I don't want to say it's too late. It's like, hey, if you're just posting it to be on the platform, great. But in terms of actually making any real headway with it, probably pretty difficult if you haven't established a strong YouTube brand yet.
Wow. So in other words, that the YouTube train is almost pulled away from the station, too far to catch it.
Yeah, I think so.
Good point.
That's just my, and again, that's just my two cents. I could be way the fuck off. I could be way wrong.
No, man, no, dude. I'm kind of feeling it, you know, because I've been on YouTube. I have a little bit of a YouTube presence for, you know, my other revenue stream. And you're right, just looking at how others are coming up and competitors are coming up and what they're doing. And yeah, just, it is kind of a beat down. I guess that's the word that comes to mind, is beat down. And I didn't used to feel that way on YouTube or accessing it or trying to look at something without a Cheetos commercial. I'm like, stop reading my mind.
Well,
stop.
But that all happened when they added YouTube TV, right? So then they added, it wasn't about the consumer anymore. It was about how they as the, you know, Google could monetize it. So that shifted things. They basically said, hey, we've built a critical mass. We're now going to monetize this from an advertising perspective. And that to me was also the mark of, okay, if you haven't got in this space as a content creator yet, then it's kind of too late.
Wow. You know, and why couldn't they just do YouTube TV, right? Talk that as a carrier and just leave the rest of us alone in the goober space. You know what I mean?
Well, so that's
have because, that as an offer. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's because Google wants to own all the analytics and everything on us, right? So that's their big value add. Hey, we know this about, you know, you. And that's how they're spinning it. But yeah, I mean, they could have. And maybe in hindsight, they should have, but they didn't. So.
Right. It's easy for us as armchair consumers.
Armchair consumer.
Oh, man.
That's funny, man.
It is, man. They could have done this, you know, but.
Backseat drivers.
Yeah, backseat driver, man, for sure. So well, that's good, but yeah, that whole e-course thing, I thought that was interesting, you know, and, you know, the prep for it, the bio, the curriculums, you know, we didn't really do a script or anything, but the whole, our slides, if you will, our deck that we're going to be reciting off of, they looked at it, yeah, the bios, now drawing up the contracts, looking at the remuneration agreement and the spread, if you will, and then you know, signing it and then doing the shoot, get the shoot done, get it back, get it edited, and they'll put it out there on the pro, you know, on the thing. It's pretty interesting because there's, you know, I'm willing to do it just for the good of the order, but man, there's no check and balance for me. Like, how do I know? How do I know how many people paid to see my course that I co-taught? You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. And that's the thing. That's where it gets a little wonky, right?
I know, and right?
I would want all those analytics at my fingertips.
Yep.
If I was going,
you know
what
I'll
route.
Do? I'll shoot you the contract and have you put the Justin Nimmergood on that and see what because that, you know, I see you doing something like this in the very near future. You know what I mean? That way, you'll already,
yeah,
you'll get a bird's eye look at what they put me through, and then you'd be like, okay, you know, this is how this is going and whatever else. So, you know,
yeah, it'd be interesting to take a peek, see what's going on.
I don't think we're going to get hit gold or platinum status since it's about sex offender treatment, but so, I don't think I'm going to get ripped off, you know, like it's going to be out there on the Pirate Bay. Like, what the heck? You know, I'm an artist. Well, yeah, and if paid for my craft.
Well, and it's like, you know, if you know their baseline though, right. And you know, right. What they've been driving as far as impressions and views, you know, to date with your, theoretically with your, you know, input in it and with the correct, what's called boosting, or whatnot of a post or advertising, which is called in general, you should hit a bit of an accelerator with it. And as long as they have a mechanism to report that back to you, you know, theoretically should be an automated engine for you in the future. That's perfect world scenario.
Woo. I love that. I should have an automated this, that, that they're going to be like, oh my God, who is this guy? Yeah, it'd be great, man. Just kick him back a rebuttal before I sign it. Just scare him.
Yeah. No, I mean, you should actually. Just be so, like, hey, you know, I was thinking about this and I just want to make sure we have all the right, I have access to all the right data points, you know, as this rolls out. Right. Cause so Naomi's dealt with this in a very real way. And it's something that we, you know, collectively strategize about a lot. Like, she works with a lot of these beauty companies that, you know, they have her be a extended or a direct, you know, brand ambassador for them. And she'll be promoting their product, educating on it and the like. But it's like, how are you now taking the content that she's created and getting that to market? So that's the key.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then what the analytics are once it's in the market, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yes. It's kind of like being an ambassador, you know, CEU ambassador. And this one, that's kind of nice.
CEU.
Continuing education unit, folks.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Continuing education, yes, sir. For lawyers, it's continuing, it's CLE, it's continuing legal education, et cetera, et cetera. So
that's cool, man. I encourage you to pursue it. And yeah,
oh, well,
if you need
you,
any
man.
Help, let's,
you know me,
you know, chat about it or whatever.
Oh, yeah, man. I say yes first and ask questions later on these deals. You know me, man. I'm like a bull in a china shop, man. It's like, sure.
Yeah. So. Well, and I do that oftentimes, too. But, yeah, I've also learned my lesson from that as well.
Yeah, me too, a little bit. I just kind of say sure in a lesser rate, but yeah.
Figure the rest out later, right?
Yeah. But this one seemed like a pretty good thing to cut my teeth on and see what's about and, you know, see what that kind of next level application is. Plus it is kind of gets me out there, that side of myself out there as a brand, right? Bruce Cameron, you know, the content area expert in these matters brand, you know what I mean? So it still is, you know, in essence, two for one. I'm getting monetized exposure for the course, but then number two, you know, for expert witness or expert consultation or whatever, you know what I mean? at least in my mind, I'm getting that roll off as well.
Yeah. So yeah, and it's content creation, and that's king right now. So yeah, it can't be bad. It's going to be all positive, because you're either going to benefit from it or you're going to learn from it. Either way,
right? Either way, it's a W, capital or lowercase. Indeed, indeed. Well, anything else before we wrap up, man?
I think nice spitball session today. I think we covered a wide range of topics, coaching and otherwise. And I think our listeners hopefully will get a lot out of just hearing how we even, on the line, strategize through some of these scenarios.
Think through current events and topics. And yeah, next week, we have a guest next week, so we'll get that on board for our listeners. So folks, thanks for tuning in today's Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Don't forget to see us on social media, the Concierge Coaches. Check our Facebook page, our Instagram page. We have a LinkedIn page. And also our shows are on iTunes, and they're also archived on the LA Talk Radio site. We have our own page where you can listen to our shows with a player that pops up, or you can even download the full MP3 just to have and cherish. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks reach you?
Nimmergood.com.
There it is. Say no more. Well, folks, that's a wrap for this week. We'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show. Have a blessed week, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.